Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
It is indeed The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe, being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. Advertising Show, a Big Radio Midgets production. This title kind of gets you. If you look at it very quickly, it looks like where East meets West, but it's not. It's where East eats West. And there's an interesting description of those words and how Sam Goodman puts it. And you'll find out about that here as we talk to him out of Beijing, where it's actually, you know, we're recording this show here in December, and it's actually the following day, as, you know, obviously he's on the other side of the world, boys and girls. So we'll be talking with him at this particular hour. It's about 4 o'clock in the afternoon here in Houston, but it's 6 o'clock tomorrow morning in Beijing.
Right.
So now you know your geography.
So if he sounds a little tired...
Yeah.
He's drinking a little green tea over there.
Or hopefully some caffeinated stuff, too, as well.
Yeah.
Or not. That's fine. But anyway, Sam Goodman is... we'll tell you more about Sam here in just a moment. Brad, you've got something.
You know, I mentioned... you and I were talking about the various microsites that are opening up around the world from well-known branded companies. ESPN will roll out a local website for Los Angeles. Actually, they did do that just prior to Christmas, with sites for New York and other cities to follow as it eyes regional advertising sales. ESPN envisioning bringing online 20 or more local sites that target fans and sports news specific to the area of teams and athletes in the area. So it makes a lot of sense, I think, to do that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think it's a great idea.
The World Wide Web, it's all about being local sometimes.
Yeah, and that's a funny thing. I talk about radio. Radio's big anthem this past year, it was live and local, which for the most part, it is neither live or local.
These days,
you've
right.
got syndication. You've got voice tracking. And you've got not as much local content as you really need to have.
And many of our listeners may not understand what voice tracking is. Why don't you explain that, Ray?
Well, all right, Brad, I'll do that. Basically, the music that is played on the radio, for the most part, in most towns, is pre-programmed. You can't request songs. Maybe you can, but you probably can't. And in between those songs, the disc jockey, the announcer, comes on. You will voice track. What that means is you'll do the intros and the outros. You talk about the music or events. And you can walk out of a studio for a four-hour shift in about 40 minutes, and you're done.
And that announcer may be used in multiple markets in some cases.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of multiple market usage. So as a result, a lot of radio stations, unfortunately, and not all of them,
right.
You know, they'll do a live morning show. In some cases, that's not true as well. You talk about Joyner, you know, he's a syndicated morning show host, or the McKnight guy on the smooth jazz stations. But for the most part, I find it comical that they have the webcams in the studios, and if you ever go look, middays or probably afternoon drive
They're
or
empty.
Even evenings,
empty.
There ain't nobody there, folks.
Yeah.
Does that scare you? Well, it should scare radio a little bit that they can walk away from something like that and just kind of leave it, you know, go. Now, that does not mean that radio cannot be live and local. It can be local. That's the choice of the stations and the companies and the program directors. And those who are smart enough to get that concept, FCC, are you listening, that they should be awarded and rewarded for good behavior. But unfortunately, I find it so comedic at the NAB convention, the National Association of Broadcasters convention. We want to be live and local. Well, that means you got to hire people.
Right.
And not fire people, as is the trends have gone over the past couple of years.
And that's all been about consolidation and companies that,
Wall Street, for crying out loud.
Right. You say CC, Clear Channel, and others have consolidated and acquired companies that own other broadcast properties and therefore try to do the economies of scale by having, as you just described, the voice talent that will voice for a multiple of markets. And, you know, it's all about squeezing more money with less overhead out of the same property. And, you know, now Clear Channel is a private company. It's gone private from once being public, and they're struggling, frankly. Clear Channel's struggling, along with a lot of other radio companies.
And consider how they would have been struggling a lot more had they not taken these unfortunate measures to do so.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really kind of a sad state that we talk about radio as we enter into a new year. Let's hope that radio gets it a little bit more and comes back and does some smart stuff for 2010. And I know there's a lot of good people in radio out there who really, they bust their butt for, you know, their listeners, and they do a good job. But Wall Street definitely does get in the way of logic, of live and local. So now you know. Jeffrey Gittimer is here with us. Be a success. Well, I sure want to be a failure, so we better listen.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
What do you think it takes to become a success? That's a question. The secret of good, smart questions are those that make the prospect stop and think, consider new information, and answer in terms of you. If you ask people questions that you could have found the answer to out by some means as simple as looking up the information on their website, how intelligent or hardworking does that make you look? Let me give you the two-word answer. Not very. You do have the luxury of asking a weak question about their stuff if you preface it by saying, you know, I was looking at your website last night. I got a couple of ideas I'd like to talk to you about, but there's a few things I'd like to understand a little bit better about the way you serve your customer. Now you can ask anything and look like a genius. If you walk in with an idea that you got from reading their annual report, a trade magazine, reading their web information, you're going to earn the respect of the person making the buying decision. You'll also be viewed as credible. Respect and credibility lead to trust, and trust leads to the sale. Think about that the next time that you're formulating your questions.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, Gittomer.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say,
"This is Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you that if no one responds to your ad, it may be because your ad sucks."
Gittimer's great. He's got a weekly e-zine. If you don't get it, I think it's bygittimer.com, and subscribe to it. It's free. If you're wondering how to make money or just get ahead in 2010, this is not a bad way to start the year. He'll probably even get you into shape, too, I would imagine, because he does a good job at that as well. But Jeffrey Gittimer, it's bygittimer.com. Sam Goodman is our guest out of Beijing. He's a Canadian serial entrepreneur. In a good way, starting his first business at 11. My, he must have been ADHD as well.
It was a liquor store.
I don't think so. Moving to China in 95, and as you'll hear in the interview here, we talked to Sam, he still hasn't lost his Canadian accent, and that's comical. Goodman learned the language, built and sold the world-famous in China chain of cafes, Beijing Sammy's, was a client partner for the world's largest executive recruitment firm and a successful negotiator in English and Chinese on the Westinghouse U.S.-China $5.4 billion nuclear power plant bid. Wow. When he's not working, he's rock climbing with his wife and his daughter. Mate apparently puts him on his back and climbs up the rocks. What a guy. What a guy. So Sam is an interesting character, and he also wrote a book. It's called Where East Eats West, and we're going to find out about the book and a little bit more about Sam here in just a few moments on The Advertising Show. Ray Shillen's Brad Forsyth. Hey, by the way, this is a brand new year as you're listening to this particular show. Happy New Year. You know, it's not too late to say that. I hope 2010 is incredibly good for you, and you're good for it as well. So do something good this year as well. But The Advertising Show is powered by Shipple.com and a program called Tendency. It's a marketing platform. Check it out. It's SCHIPUL.com. And that's it. Sam, coming up next from Beijing with Ray Shillens and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsythe.
Men. Nothing takes it off like Noxzema medicated cheese.
On the Advertising Show, as promised, Sam Goodman, a very special guest out of Beijing. This weekend, Sam is the author of Where East Eats West, a brand new book, and we'll tell you where you can find out more about the book as well. And we'll learn a lot about Sam, too, so that's a great conversation coming your way. Hey, Sam, thanks for being here on the Advertising Show.
Gentlemen, thanks for having me. It's an honor.
Well, we're the one that are honored today, Sam, and thank you for taking time out of your day, your early morning time over there in Beijing, China. First off, curious, what do you think of other books that have been written about China? We receive a lot of books from publishers around the world, and we see a lot out there written on the subject. What did you find before writing your own book, what your thoughts were on books about China?
Well, there's certainly a lot of books that are out there, and while I've seen my fair share of good books and bad books, and some of them are nothing more than general books that are going to make you say, okay, well, I don't feel like I got anything out of that. And then there's books that are really negative, all about China. And when I decided to write this, I said, okay, listen, I've got to do something different, and it's got to be something that people who, again, I'm focusing on the people who are on the ground and in the trenches. And so I said, well, I'm going to write a book that's going to be, you know, a street smarts guide for the little guy, not the corporate bigwig or the person who's coming in with, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars behind them to start up an empire. And so I decided I would go not with a China horror story book, because there's certainly oodles of those, but really a book that people can take and say, you know what, I need some help. I want to get a better understanding, and I don't want to have to wade through a ton of gobbledygook to get there. And so that's why Where East Eats West is set up in such a way where, it's 105 chapters. And if you look at the book, you're like, there's no way there's 105 mm-hmm. chapters, because, I mean, each chapter really is like a page or two. And it's just, here's the point, this is what you need to know, and move on. And so I just wanted to make something different, fun, and, of course, educational as well as entertaining. And so that's why I decided I'd split that up.
Yeah, I guess with that many chapters, it kind of becomes the dim sum of Chinese book material, right? Little bit pieces, little dishes.
Right, bite-sized. I want to taste that one. Okay, move on. Let's try another one. Exactly.
Well, you know, as Ray mentioned in reading your bio last segment, you moved to China in 95. You've got real-world, on-the-ground experience in starting companies out there. And as you already mentioned, your content is different than other books in that you're all about the entrepreneur that wants to follow in your footsteps, I suppose. So I guess, unlike big companies that I guess can afford to make mistakes and trip up and throw some more money at it and hang in there, a small entrepreneur, those mistakes can be costly and cost the entire endeavor. Are there still opportunities in China today?
Absolutely. China is just getting started, and while if you were to travel to a Beijing or Shanghai, there's no doubt in my mind that you will be blown away with how modern the cities are. And, I mean, they are truly breathtaking, some of the architecture that's going into these cities and the building, that's incredible. But there are still tremendous opportunities, even within Beijing and Shanghai, certainly in the second tier and third tier cities. You got to remember there are, you know, 1.5 billion people here. So there are so many cities that have over a million people. And if you were just to focus on any one of these, depending on what your market is and what you're selling, there's definitely opportunities here. And just a quick note, when I started the book, and it was for the entrepreneurs, it's been a real honor, because there's a number of universities that have already started picking it up and making it part of their curriculum, which to me, it's really the anti-textbook, which is, I guess, the reason why a lot of the students are liking it. But it's been interesting to see how quickly the MBA students are saying, you know, this is really great, because it's so not like your normal textbook, and it is so full of the on-the-ground, in-the-trenches stories that it's being picked up by a few other areas, which is always nice.
Yeah, well, you mentioned schools, Boston College, Rutgers, Colorado State, just to name three, as you mentioned, picked up your book as part of the MBA curriculum. You mentioned various major markets throughout China and the opportunities. One of the biggest secrets you say in your book in moving to the Chinese market is its appearance over substance. Explain what you mean by this, Sam.
Okay, well, appearance over substance, that's how I would explain the concept of face. And most Westerners, when they first come to China, they get a little over mystical about what face is or what is Guanxi, and Guanxi is nothing really more than your network. So what I try to do is say, listen, I need you to understand this concept in something that you, as a Westerner, understand instead of trying to get your head wrapped around this foreign concept of face. Because face is very much like, I mean, there's giving face and saving face, and then there's somebody else, you know, possibly losing face. So there's different aspects of it, but at the end of the day, the best way I can explain it is appearance over substance. If you go through the steps that are necessary for somebody to gain face, then that's good enough. And the best way I can explain it is using, you know, Tony Soprano or something from The Godfather, where if somebody's not showing Tony the proper respect, then, you know, they get bumped. And it's that kind of respect that they're showing. It doesn't have to come from the heart. They don't have to truly respect each other in the, you know, from the heart sort of perspective. But if they're going through the right motions and they're showing the right face, then it's the appearance of it, that's good enough. And there's a lot of that that does go on. And please note that this is not to say that respect and integrity and these things don't exist in China. It's really, this is focusing on the business environment. And just be aware that if you feel that someone, I mean, in the West, they'll call you being two-faced. I mean, you can take it anywhere along a spectrum, you know, from the absolute worst being two-faced, and then you not take it down as being diplomatic or as being politically correct, whatever you want to call it. But just get your head wrapped around that, look, you know, for people to gain face or to give face, it's a matter of not so much of you really have to like this person and respect them. But if you go through the right steps and the right motions, then that's good enough for a lot of people.
On the Advertising Show out of Beijing this weekend, it's Sam Goodman. Sam is the author of a book called Where East Eats West. Where East Eats West is also the website. You just put dashes in there and you'll find it. Or, of course, if you Google Sam, I'm sure you're going to find it as well. It's a brand new book. We've got Sam for a couple more segments here with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on the Advertising Show, and we hope you stay right here.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
Do you know exactly how to read an Oreo world? To do it, you unscrew it very fast.
It's the Advertising Show. Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, and out of Beijing this weekend is Sam Goodman, who is author of Where East Eats West. And I've got to ask you, Sam, for somebody who has moved from Canada so many, many years ago, you seem to still have that Canadian accent with you. How does that happen?
I get just lucky, I guess.
We're not going to ask you to say about or out, okay? But other than that,
we may call you a hoser from time to time.
It's fine. You feel at home.
But all the people in China don't think he has a Canadian accent. Imagine that.
Of course,
I don't understand.
Of course not.
You know, in the second section of your book, Sam, you offer a crash course on Chinese business realities. You list three particular realities of Chinese business that will impact Western businesses seeking to expand into the Chinese marketplace. Let's go through each of these, beginning with the difficulties in finding experienced managers.
Okay. All right. Real quick, I just want to make a point that the book is called Where East Eats West. Not because China is such a dangerous place and really out to get you, but really because so many Westerners go to China uninformed and unprepared on the whole how, where, and why.
Mm-hmm.
business is done differently in China and then get their lunch eaten. So, it's where East eats West, not because China's going to get you, but because, you know, we just make a lot of mistakes. Okay, back to the manager question. The best way I can explain it is in North America, there's sort of a bell-shaped curve in terms of experienced managers, where on the left side there's people with no experience, on the right side there's a lot of experience, and in the middle there's quite a few middle managers who've got quite a few years of experience. And this is done fairly quickly because they are trained by managers who have years and years of experience, who are trained by managers who have years and years of experience, et cetera, et cetera. And the market economy in North America has been around for such a long period of time that when you're getting trained as a manager, you've got, you know, 50 to 100 years of experience being dumped into your head as quickly as possible. Whereas in China, this is a relatively new market. I mean, it's really about 25 years old in terms of opening up and starting to do the market economy methods. And so a lot of the managers who are in their 50s and 60s, who have been managers for a long time, they're first-time managers. And those managers who are just getting started in their 30s, unless they've been going to the West to do their MBA and then do some training and then come back here, in which case they have their own set of problems that I could be more than happy to cover. It's very difficult to find somebody who has been trained by an experienced manager simply because this market is so new.
Yeah, and the other two you mentioned is employee longevity as well as training. I understand the training aspects and how that can be difficult. Employee longevity, talk a little bit about that.
Sure. Employee longevity is just simply the fact that because so many companies are coming to China and they're all scrambling for the best people, and please understand, I think there's a chapter in there called the Great China, the Talent Puddle, because while it is very vast, finding people in China is certainly not a problem with 1.5 billion people. Finding people is not a problem, but finding good people to do what you want, that becomes a challenge. And so everyone's always looking for pretty much the same people. And so what tends to happen is part of the issue in China is people will jump from one company to another company if there's a small rise in their salaries. And again, because so many companies are coming in to start up a new business, that tends to happen quite often, where somebody will find somebody they like and they'll get another offer for another 50 cents higher and they're gone. That's just difficult.
If you're part of the Chinese workforce, it's great to be Chinese living in China these days. You know, just to wrap up this segment, one final question. I'm strapped on a table, and Ray is slowly dripping water on my forehead, setting this next question up.
Guantanamo?
You're quoted as saying doing business in China is like Chinese water torture. Explain, Sam.
Okay. To be fair, I actually never found any information that Chinese water torture was actually used in China. The best way I can explain it is everyone knows what the Chinese water torture is, where you get these little tiny things that just keep happening to you over and over again, and slowly you go insane.
Right.
Not because any one of the individual drops is such a huge hurdle, but again, the challenges of doing business in China is not about the large scale problems that are going to be thrown at you. It's that from a Western perspective, we have what we call, our cultural bias on the way things ought to be. And then when we get to China, for a whole host of reasons, things tend to drip out of what our comfort zone is. And it's these things that just constantly barrage you that slowly drive you insane. Because like, here's another little problem. Okay, it's kind of like the mosquito that's in your ear when you're trying to sleep. It's not a big deal, but if it just came and left, you'd be fine, but it just keeps coming back. And so that's the Chinese water torture. And that's the kind of problem that you're really going to face trying to do business in China, is that it just, the little stuff never stops.
So in the American term, it would be having a case of the Mondays or something like that, and or we've been referred to as Chinese water torture from time to time here, but that's another story. with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth on The Advertising Show. And our guest out of Beijing this weekend is Sam Goodman, author of Where East Eats West. No, it's not a cooking book. It's a lot more. And we'll tell you more about that and talk to Sam and do a whole bunch of cool stuff here in the next segment. We hope you stay right here at The Advertising Show.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com. How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth back with you with the Advertising Show. Our special guest out of Beijing this weekend, it's Sam Goodman, author of Where East Eats West. You can go to the website. It's got dashes in it, where-east-eats-west.com. Or you can just go ahead and type in Sam's name, and I'm sure you'll find the book there as well. Sam, a pleasure having you here at the Advertising Show.
Thanks, gentlemen. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and I want to encourage all of our listeners, check out the book. If you're even thinking about China as a marketplace to either enter in or expand your business, it's a wonderful read and a great book and some real down-to-earth advice from a person that's living there and doing business there. Let's take advantage of the fact that you are living in Beijing and doing business there. I want to get into your head and let's share a little bit about what your world's all about living there. Describe what it's like raising a family in China these days.
I can tell you, it changes so quickly here. When before I had my kid, I was like, oh, I don't want to raise my child here. But life in Beijing is getting very easy, incredibly easy, and I'm also finding that what I thought were very high costs for education are not so different. I've got friends who are back home who tell me that their child, the child care or the daycare costs about the same as it would here.
Hmm.
So, I mean, I can buy any kind of fruits and vegetables and actually quite a few other ones, that I wouldn't get back home. There's plenty of shops that I can get anything I want in terms of the normal amenities and that I would get back home, and it's getting really easy to be in China. There's also other perks. I mean, I've got I guess what you'd say like a cleaning lady who can come in, you know, a couple hours every day, which I could not afford if I was back home. But I mean, I've got friends who are jealous. Like, I haven't had to wash my clothes or clean my house in years, and they're just like, oh, I'm moving to China.
Yeah. What do you tend to socialize with other expats, or do you socialize with some of the other Chinese there in your community, or?
Oh, both. Definitely both. Then there's the mix, but there's the Chinese who've been overseas and who have then come back. It's a very good mix. I've got friends who are expatriates, Canadians, Americans, from Australia, all over. And we're all living in China, so it's a common bond, which is really interesting. And then, of course, you find your friends who are doing the same things you like to do. I mean, I enjoy rock climbing and things like that, so there's a group of friends that do that. And then, of course, there's quite a few Chinese that I've known for a number of years. And we still hang out as well. Although I must say there's not as much. It's like you hang out with the Chinese friends or you're hanging out with your Western friends. Sometimes there's a mix, but it's usually one or the other.
Well, rock climbing. I want to find out about that real quick here. You're one of those crazy people that climb up the face of a large granite substance and without ropes or anything like that?
No, no. I, if my mom is watching, I wear a helmet and I use ropes.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's very exciting. I don't do traditional rock climbing. I do what's called sport climbing, where they already have the quick draws and the carabiners, whatever, using that. So instead of trying to wedge something in the rock face without leaving anything, I don't do that. You know, some traditionalists will poo-poo that, but it's unfortunate because every story I hear of somebody dying from rock climbing tends to be from traditional rock climbing and not sport climbing.
But yeah, living is much better and continue on that plane. Yes, definitely.
Do you find there's a natural curiosity about North Americans and China among the Chinese?
Absolutely. Actually, it's been very interesting. Coming from a psychology background, I mean, just an undergrad, I've always been interested in how people think and why they think. And I have to say that the illusions Chinese people have or the assumptions Chinese people have about the West almost mirror the assumptions and the illusions that Western people have of the Chinese. And I just find that fascinating that, because in China, you'll hear these groups of Chinese talking about what foreigners are like. And it's just like, oh, yeah, foreigners do this, and foreigners are like that. And I'll stick my head in there, and I'm like, and how many foreigners do you know that follow that? It doesn't change. It's not so different than in North America where you have, oh, yeah, I hear, you know, the Chinese people like this or the Chinese people like that. But it happens all the time. And that was one of the reasons that where East Eats West is there's kind of, get rid of those stereotypes, understand the true issue on doing business in China, and really just get beyond what I call China rookie mistakes. I mean, there's far more advanced China mistakes to make, so if you can just get past the China rookie mistakes, then you're well on your way.
Well, just work on that Toronto accent or whatever, or the Canadian accent, you'll be all set, Sam. But it's been great having you here on the show. Continue the success. Write more books. They're great. Where East Eats West is the name of the new book by Sam, and you can find that on the web. And anyway, it's been a pleasure having you here.
Thanks, gentlemen. It's been a pleasure having being had.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsythe. Back in just a minute with more.
There is somewhere better to get inspired creative ideas, and this is where it's at. OpenAd.net, the first online platform for advertisers, changing the way that ideas are created and traded. Access nearly 11,000 creative minds representing 125 countries around the world, waiting online to have a go at your brief. Imagine the impact such range and diversity of talent can have on your next advertising campaign. All creative work is IP cleared before you get it. We take care of all the details, while you get brilliant ideas in a fraction of the time, at a lower cost, and with a lot less fuss. No endless meetings, no away days. When a client needed a PR campaign to include people who couldn't make it to the G8 rally, they got 53,000 people to join a virtual protest and a campaign that won 2 international creative awards. OpenAd.net, busting down the walls of the ad industry. Put us to the test. Just go to OpenAd.net and give us a try. What have you got to lose? The future starts here.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe.
From San Francisco comes...
Rice, a-roni, the San Francisco treat. Rice, a-roni, the flavor can't be beat.
Enjoyed talking to Sam Goodman, author of that book called Where East Eats West. Here at the Advertising Show, with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe. Hey, by the way, next week it is, let me just double check, make sure that I'm right. Where is it? Oh, it's Jeff Klein, actually, we're going to talk to next week. Here, Jeff is the CEO of Cause Alliance Marketing and author of a book called Working for Good. So we'll be talking with him in a few days here from now. Sam had an interesting story about Beijing. And an interesting perspective as well. I don't know where he lived in Canada, but since most of Canada is frozen, I'm sure he is enjoying the change of pace weather that they have there.
Although parts of China gets frozen as well, but hopefully he's in the warmer area of China.
Yes, in the Beijing, rock climbing thing.
Whatever Beijing is weather-wise.
I was thinking it was closer to the south, but I guess
parts, it's such a big country. It's
almost like, as big as Texas is, yeah, exactly. Anyway, this is interesting. You know, Chrysler got the bailout money. They got the dollars.
Right, they took it.
And then they went ahead and hired an Italian ad agency.
Really?
Yeah.
It's I didn't know that.
What the heck is that all about?
Yeah. Didn't get any money from the Italian guys, did you?
No. Chrysler Group's Oliver Francois, the president and CEO of the Chrysler vehicle brand, has tapped Armando Testa. Armando Testa.
Yeah.
For the his agency for the Italian Lancia, I guess that's the way you say it.
Lancia.
Yeah. To refashion a Lancia commercial for the U.S. market, hiring an Italian agency for the work may not sit well with the American taxpayers who bailed out the agency.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and take our money elsewhere.
Right.
So if you weren't ticked off about it before, now you know, right, and you're allowed to be ticked off about that. What were you guys thinking? You know, I suppose what's most important is that they do move ahead and they do grow and do get better. But basically, I don't get that. I really don't get that.
Seems kind of silly to me. Not a good PR move. Probably hear more and more about that. Of course, GM flush with cash, some several billions of dollars, as I recall reading recently, and I assume that
did they go with Fallon or something like that?
Well, I'm just assuming they paid back the money that they,
took
on loan because they're flushing cash now. And then, of course, Ford, the smart one of the bunch, didn't take any cash. They're doing quite well.
And they've got the number one car out there to the Ford Taurus, I guess it is. Hey, Gene Bliss is with us here. Let your guard down. Wouldn't do that. Not a good idea. Let's listen and find out what that's all about.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome, with your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
CD Baby has been thriving since 1998 as one of the largest sellers of independent music on the web. They sold $4.5 million of CDs online to customers in 2008. This whimsical note is sent to confirm orders. Your CD has been gently taken from our CD Baby shelves with sterilized, contamination-free gloves and placed onto a satin pillow. Our packaging specialist from Japan lit a candle and a hush fell over the crowd as he put your CD into the finest gold-lined box that money can buy. We all had a wonderful celebration afterwards, and the whole party marched down the street to the post office, where the entire town of Portland waved bon voyage to your package on its way to you in our private CD Baby jet. We're all exhausted, but can't wait for you to come back to CDBaby.com. CD Baby paid over $34 million to artists in 2008, up 28% from 2007. Sales rose 30% in 2007, much as a result of this very real communication they have with their customers. CD Baby bonds with customers by letting down their guard. Do you?
This has been your weekly installment of the Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights for major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
Thank you, Gene Bliss, here at the Advertising Show. I love you more than my dog is her brand new book as we wrap up this program.
Yeah, Ariana Huffington is launching the Huffington Post Los Angeles today. Darling, she's a very bright person, but I can't help when I listen to her. It's like I keep looking up at the screen expecting to see Zsa Zsa Gabor. But anyway, there's a lot of Eddie Albert. Yeah, there's a lot of conversation going on in Los Angeles, according to Huffington, who's previously launched local sites for Chicago, New York, and Denver. The new site will be led by Willow Bay and Billy Silverman. Not that those people are of any interest to you or me, but I'm just reading it because it was right here on the news item.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now you know.
Yeah.
Next week, Jeff Klein, CEO of Cause Alliance Marketing and author of Working for Good. as opposed to working for bad. That's a good idea.
That'd be like Google.
Right. Advertising show brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. Tell a friend, too, about The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production.